It's 8:11 now. Good morning. Well, as we've reported, the Summit County Council held a public hearing on Wednesday about the Little Valley subdivision request for a special exception. We'll be getting to an interview with Don Bowes. First on the phone with us from Mountain Trails is Charlie Sturgis. Good morning.
Hey, it's Laura Smith. How are you doing, Leslie?
Good. Okay. Hi, Laura.
Yeah, Charlie's out of town. Not a whole lot on the trails front. Kind of the same old, same old. If it's sticking to your heels or wheels this weekend, please stay off the trails. We're looking at a wet weekend and, you know, going into the early part of next week, we're thinking it's going to be time to be doing something indoors, maybe not out on the trails. Yeah, we've got Live PC, Give PC coming up next Friday. Great fundraiser for trails and for a lot of nonprofits here in town. So hopefully people will get out there and make their vote on November 11th for the Day of Giving. And there's a ski swap at Basin Rec Fieldhouse this weekend. So keep in mind, if you need any outdoor gear, that would be or ski gear, snowboard gear, that would be a great place to go. I think it's $10 for adults and $5 for kids to get in. And again, maybe something great to do during a wet weekend. That's about all we've got for now, and I hope everybody has a great weekend.
Okay, probably the final trails report until things kick up with skiing. So thanks, Laura.
Yeah, no problem. Talk to you soon.
8:13 now. Good morning. Again, as we've reported, the Summit County Council held a public hearing Wednesday on the proposed Little Valley subdivision request for a special exception. More than 50 people turning out in opposition of that. One of those was Dawn Bowes. She's a resident of Silver Creek. She joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Dawn.
Good morning, Leslie.
So real quick, you had started a petition to fight this. How many signatures are we up to at this point?
We, as of this morning, have 617.
Wow. I mean, are those just Silver Creek residents, or are those just friends of friends of friends?
You know, I look through the list, and I would say probably 20% are people who are family, friends, who don't live in the area, who signed. But the majority of the folks that, you know, gone through it, I know personally, so I feel pretty good about a pretty large group of people who are in opposition to this. But more importantly, it's the landowners who are adjacent to it, who attended the meeting and are pretty vocal about their opposition to this development.
Okay. Well, why is this something that you guys are against? I mean, when you think about it, 2,800 acres for the total property area, 12 homes doesn't seem like a lot.
Actually, 2,800 acres is for the entire preserve development. So that includes what they've already developed. So this is just 108 acres that is across the street from the gate to the preserve. And that is only 108 acres, of which probably 50% of it is unbuildable because it's on a hillside greater than 30 degrees. So that's why they propose to consolidate it into more of an urban setting where homes are closer together, clustered in a cul-de-sac,
okay,
which is completely inconsistent with the properties that are around it that are between 10 and 20 acres.
Yeah. Tell me, can you give us a little bit better location? I've had a couple of phone calls and really unable, not knowing Silver Creek that well, to tell them where this is.
So it's between Silver Creek and the preserve off of Bittner Ranch Road at the end where it forks up into Stagecoach. So it's in the hillside stewardship zone, and it's right next to, actually, Lewis Park is the largest landowner adjacent to the property, which is in Silver Creek.
All right.
And that's a nature preserve, about an 80-acre nature preserve that was, the easement was granted by Silver Creek residents about 10 or 15 years ago to preserve that area.
All right. In terms of what's being proposed, I mean, you've been very specific. I mean, again, besides just the number of lots that are smaller than what's around there, what are some of your other issues with the proposed development?
Well, I think what we found, the largest issue is just the legality of it. An attorney who lives in Silver Creek looked at it in more detail and found that they just don't have the unit to transfer, that they've already used up the development units. It's a part of the preserve development. That's the part of the 2,800 acres. They're looking to move. They already got approval for 6, which we question whether that was legal in the first place because they didn't have the units to transfer. Now they want to transfer an additional 6 to that area.
So who needs to look into that? The county attorney?
Yes, I believe, the board unanimously voted to delay the meeting, and primarily for legal review. They were not hearing other issues as it related to or wasn't important to their decision with regard to the water impacts and to other impacts around the wildlife. It's a major wildlife area. They were very focused on, you know, do they have a special exception and can they legally transfer these units? And having brought up and questioning whether they have the units and whether they have the proper description of the transfer of those units was in question. So I think it's under legal review, and which is why they delayed it to November 20th.
Yeah. So if it is found that, in fact, they only have 6 units, would you guys be okay with that?
At this point, legally, I don't know that they can. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if what we get is a trail through the property, which has already been in their amendment agreements. And it's very complicated. It's kind of like a shell game. There's been 3 amendments to a very complex property. But back in the 3rd Amendment, they had approved putting a trail that would connect Lewis Park to the Cobblestone Trail, which is the Basin Rec public trail system.
Still, it sounds like that it's not going to be left open, that there will be some development. I guess if that's the case, then, I mean, what could the applicant do to make it a better project?
You know, I don't know if they can. The area is just not suitable for development. It's on a hillside. It's got more than the property. I was just up there yesterday on my horse. It's a major wildlife area. There's a seasonal stream, which they didn't mention in the application. They said there was no seasonal stream. That's going to impact our water quality. You know, with 12 condensed units all on septic draining into our water supply, you know, is a problem. There's just so many problems with this property. That's why I think so many people are against it. And I don't know that there's a good solution. I mean, the developer proposed that we had 2 options. One was cluster development with 12 homes all on 2.5 acres or spread it out over 5, but I don't think they can do that. And the code is very clear. They can't build on 30-acre slopes, and that's what they would have to do to spread it out to be on 5 acres.
Okay. I know you have a sick horse to get back to. Anything else that you wanted to mention?
You know, I just wanted to mention that it's, you know, still a public concern that people, you know, please, if you live in Snarville Basin and care about this development going in, because it does set a precedent for other developers, what's to prevent that area being entirely developed in more suburban kind of development when it doesn't fit in that area. So they need to show up for the meeting, sign the petition. They can sign the petition on change.org, say no to Little Valley, or just search under Bittner, the landowner. And you'll find that petition. You'll find more detailed information on that. Our legal argument is posted there as well, so you can learn more about that. And then show up for the November 20th meeting, where I'm assuming a final decision will be made by the council, and it will probably be made on the legal issues surrounding it.
All right. Again, you plan to bring out the numbers, I'm guessing, for the November 20th hearing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the county has the copy of the petition. It'll be a public record.
Okay. Again, that special meeting will be Monday, November 20th, 6 p.m. It'll be held at the Sheldon Richens Building. Don, thanks for your time this morning. Sure. Well, a good crowd turned out at last night to find out more about the new proposed Arts and Culture District. In the studio with a recap of what they heard and what that means moving forward, I have Mayor Jack Thomas along with the project manager, Nate Rockwood. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Leslie.
So happy with the turnout?
We are, indeed. I mean, about 85 people?
Yeah, there was about 85 people, and it was a full room. We had moved it from the library because we had so many people last time, and so we were glad to see just as many turn out this time.
Okay, well, so what was your sense of the crowd? I mean, were they artists and those who will appreciate this space, or were they people, maybe potential critics of the project?
As I moved around, I thought it was a good cross-section of Park City residents. And so I'm sure there's some artists. We all think we're artists in some way, shape, or form. But it was a good cross-section of the folks that live here. And they were very engaged, and we took a lot of comments, a lot of sharing.
Okay.
And very optimistic, I would say.
All right. We'll talk a little bit about some of those comments first. But, Nate, in your introduction, you'd mentioned the city's priorities with transportation and housing. What conversations have you or the city had with the consultant and stakeholders regarding any negative impacts on that?
We've discussed it, and it's always been part of the proposal, is that those were going to be included in there, especially the transit piece. The housing piece is still if that fits. And that's really what we're going through, is trying to figure out what works in a district, what fits, what facilitates that arts and culture feel and helps the Kimball and the Sundance be successful in that spot. So we certainly are evaluate housing every parcel, every place that we can put it. And so it makes sense to evaluate this project and see if it makes sense to put it in there. Certainly the live, play, live, work concept is something that the general plan calls for. And so this would be a good opportunity to build something like that.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the comments that was on the wall, that this isn't big enough, 5 acres, but it is what it is, huh?
Yeah, it is what it is, and I think you do everything you can. An acre isn't big enough, but you could put a lot there, and 5 acres doesn't seem like a lot, but in a town like that, it's a big portion of what we have, so make the most of it.
So how this works is that the city in January will be closing on the 5.25 acres for $19.5 million, and then individual parcels, once we have some kind of design, will then be sold to both the Kimball Arts Center and the Sundance Institute. Do we know how big, how much property they get?
It depends on how the planning process goes, but with the footprint that we were initially looking at, with the size buildings that they want, you know, it's just under an acre possibly for the Sundance building, and just a tiny bit less than that for the Kimball building. But again, that's all subject to the planning process. The way that the agreements are laid out is that they pay for proportionally whatever that cost of the land was. And so they're paying the full cost of the land based on what size they need.
Are we being good realtors and making a profit on this, or no, we just have to sell it to them for what we paid for it?
Well, I think we all went into it with the agreement of this is how it was going to work. And so I think even though the city's buying it first, we all kind of agreed that this is the price that we were buying it for. So it is a partnership on buying that land.
Right. Right.
In terms of those negotiations with Sundance and the Kimball, again, we have just letters of intent. Can they still back out, or are you pretty confident that this is where they want to be?
They could still back out, but I am pretty confident that this is where they want to be. You know, with Webb, who talked last night, we interviewed and hired that consultant jointly with them, and we've been working together as a project development team. So,
yeah, they're very engaged. Yeah. They're very committed, and it shows up in every meeting that we have with Kimball and Sundance. They're all in, from my perspective. I mean, yeah, of course there's an opportunity to step away from it, but my sense of it is that they're very committed.
And worst case scenario, if one of them should back out, we still have a project, you believe?
Yeah, and worst case scenario, we still have a project, we still have the funding, and we go out and we find another partner that works there. That's a plan, you know, way down the list, and it's not really part of the plan because the partnership is very strong, so we're going forward with that.
And then in terms of the cost, about $100,000 for the contract with the Duncan Webb Management Services, is that just being paid for by city residents, or does Kimball and Sundance also pay in for a portion of that?
Part of the agreement is that we would pay for that initial consultant piece, and so the city is paying for that that piece. We felt that it was important to have a third sort of, I guess, a fourth set of eyes kind of looking at this and making sure that we continue to stay on course. And the Webb contract is this initial planning period ending in December, but his contract, that $100,000, covers the year or 2 years of really the design and the beginning of construction, so that we continue to have that artistic district consultant looking at the designs and saying, yeah, you're still on track, you're still doing what your goals, what you set out to do.
Duncan Webb also mentioned that the team's working with Project ABC. And in what capacity is that happening?
Well, we're doing similar processes in far as evaluating what arts and culture is happening in the city and the county. Webb is very specifically focused on facilities that would be in this new district. But we're collaborating and we're sharing information on what he sees as valuable and what they've gathered over the last 6 months. And we're going to continue to be sharing that information. I'm really excited to see what happens at the what comes out of the ABC summit that they're having on the 14th, because I think a lot of the ideas and goals that they have coming out of that are things that we could immediately look to include in this district. And so it can be a huge win for both projects, and very much the same goals of bringing more arts and culture to the city and the county.
Now, Jack, you didn't have a lot to say last night. What are your impressions now this morning?
Well, I didn't stay through the whole evening. I had another engagement that I had to run off to. But my observation is that that it's enthusiastic, it's engaging. I think there are some questions about how does a certain component of the community weigh into this? Where's the Latino community with regard to this? And it's an aspect that we've been talking to them about for literally 2.5 years. And so I think they're very excited to see this unfold, and it's an opportunity for them to participate in this district as well. So I'm hopeful as to how this unfolds. You know, it's a period of tremendous unknowns, starting any project like this, and there's a discomfort associated with that. So I think you get a little anxiety, and that's totally normal with regard to something that's this large in this community. It's bound to generate some concern, but I think that's where we are, and that's normal, and we'll move through the process. I like the commonality of comments that we're hearing, and so that helps us understand if we're moving in the right direction. And I think Duncan Webb has 40 years of experience knowing what works, not just aesthetically, but economically. And so I'm very confident that we're riding the horse in the right direction.
So not a lot of questions from the audience, but again, people did get up and make comments on the poster board around around the walls. Anything that you either of you heard saw in those comments that intrigued you? Something maybe you hadn't thought about?
We've thought about a lot of different possibilities, and we actually saw those. So I mean, I think what I was encouraged by was, like Jack said, the commonality in those, how positive they were. There are concerns about different elements of it and how it'll work, but there wasn't anything that completely surprised me. We just had that last night, so we're going to go through the comments in a little bit more detail over the next few days. But they were very positive, good comments.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, not just last night, but in earlier discussions, there's the notion of how does this affect Main Street? Well, many of us feel like this is an arts and culture district as well. And so how does this relate to it? Is it additive? Can it be additive? Can this be an intersective art? How do we create a spine to Main Street? How do we enhance the whole thing? So I think they're approaching this from the right perspective, broad view, and trying to empower other aspects of the community.
Yeah, one person brought up the fact whether or not the Latino community has been contacted and kind of brought into the process. Is that going to happen, or has that happened?
That has happened, I think. And the discussions that we've had with a lot of the Latino organizations, we've been talking about this new development and this unfolding and this opportunity.
Okay. So, again, we're at the very beginning of this process, yeah? I mean, isn't that fair to say? And then, so what happens from here?
Well, Webb has a lot of data that he's collected. We met as the sort of project development team with Kimball and Sundance, and he went through the data in a lot more detail. One of the things that I am really encouraged from that data is that it really shows as we start to figure out what goes in here, the point that he's at now is analyzing the market and whether we even have a market for something like an arts and culture district. And what was really positive is that his data really showed, yeah, you do. You have a strong market. And there's a very positive ability that you can really succeed with this if you do it right and you include the right things in there. And so I think that's now the next stage as he goes back and continues to put together recommendations, goes and pulls in a lot of different elements of other arts and culture districts throughout the country and says what might work here and what won't. And then we kind of sit down as a community and as a group and figure out, okay, we have 15 acres worth of ideas that we could put in here. How do we condense it down to 5 acres? And so that's kind of the next step.
So a next open house, I mean, we had talked maybe the end of November, but we've pushed that back to mid-December, December 12th. Is that?
Yeah, we pushed that back, and there was just some other public meetings that were around that, so we didn't want to crowd everything up. So mm-hmm. that's the next time that Duncan will be back for the community meeting. But in between there, the Project ABC is doing their summit, and so I think we'll continue to be engaged through that.
Okay. And Jack, real quick, Park City honored?
Yeah,
are you
Park
personally?
City, well, it's got my name on it, but it really means the whole community, and I can see a lot of other names besides mine on this. This is Utah Clean Energy awarded Park City acknowledgement for its leadership last night, along with Summit County, Salt Lake City, and Moab, as given our renewable initiatives early here. And so Mayor Biskupski was there, Mayor Dave, Doug Clyde, and another gentleman from the Summit County for this incredible opportunity, about 300 people. But this is something that's been hard work of many people on the council. I have to acknowledge Andy and Tim and Becca and Nan and Cindy from the council, as well as our sustainability department. We have some rock stars there. So it was nice to see and surprising to see.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you early on when you decided not to run for mayor said that you were not going to endorse a candidate.
We're gonna get into that.
Yeah, I do want to get into that. Yeah, right. You certainly, now you're saying that you are endorsing somebody. How come? What changed your mind?
I think it's a tough issue because they're both friends of mine, and I think it has to do with the hard work that we've put forth on some of these issues. Housing, transportation, a complete community. And I think that that was part of the decision that pushed me to move forward, and some personal reasons.
Okay. Well, we'll bring you back, and it won't be the last time we talk to you.
Yeah, we'll chat again.
Okay.
Thanks, Leslie.
All right. Park City Mayor Jack Thomas, along with Project Manager for the Arts and Culture District, Nate Rockward. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the applicant for the Treasure Hill development expected to ask the Park City Planning Commission soon for a vote on the conditional use permit that's needed to move the project forward. In the studio with an update of where we are in that process, I have the spokesman and one of the partners of the project of MPE, Pat Sweeney. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
Maybe just give us a little bit of background. MPE is you and your two brothers, and then along with somebody else is the partnership for Treasure Hill?
MPE is Mike, Pat, and Ed, and it's the entity under which we applied for the master plan, not only for this particular project, which is part of the master plan, but the entire master plan. There are then two landowners, one Sweeney Land Company and the other PC2. So there's three entities. There's the entity that has pursued the application, and the two landowners.
Okay, so in terms of the majority ownership, it's the MP or the PC2 that has the majority share?
No, Sweeney Land Company, which is also my brothers and I, and PC2 have equal shares.
Okay.
And MPE gets an interest for their efforts from both parties.
Okay, for the last 30 years. Because we're approaching that 30-year mark, yeah, since the approval of this?
Yeah, we're a little past it. A little past it.
Right, 86, I guess. 85 was the final approval, and 86 when we started.
86 was when the council approved the master plan. They called it up and considered it de novo, and that was in 86.
All right. Now, Park City Code says that an applicant can ask for a decision at any point on an application before the City Planning Commission, and then the Planning Commission has 45 days to make a decision, as I understand it. Are you ready to ask for that decision at the November 14th meeting?
Minor technicality. That's actually state statute, but that sounds correct to me. We don't think we're going to need to do that. We're not at the point where we're going to do that.
ask for a decision?
Correct. It's our understanding, and obviously we don't speak for the Planning Commission, but it's our understanding that there's interest in getting this voted on before the end of the year. And as long as that happens, that will be great with us.
Okay, so to make that happen, though, I mean, they have up to, I guess, 45 days. So you could ask for the decision in December, the second meeting in December, but you wouldn't get a decision.
Right. If we were to employ that, then we wouldn't be able to get a decision for 45 days after we employ it. At the present time, we don't intend to do that. We think we're going to get a vote without doing that.
Oh, why do you think that? I guess I'm just curious.
Just from conversations with the staff and the Planning Commission, and that's my general understanding. Now, I only control my part of that conversation, obviously, but I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here.
All right. So most recently, a document that was missing from the original application service, actually I think two documents. How important was that to find that?
We don't think it was that important. That was one document among many that I personally prepared in 1984. And it was the first document that we formally applied for the master plan using. Once again, it's like hundreds and, in our case, thousands of images, slides. Back then, they were acetates that you would project with an overhead projector. And one of them in the early process is just a piece of the process. It doesn't have that kind of meaning to us.
My understanding is that it dealt with accessory and lobby space. I mean, and I guess how much you're entitled to. I mean, does that help your case and prove all along what we've heard that, or does it make the case for the planning commissioners, former planning commissioners that we've heard that they never realized that they were approving 1 million square feet of development?
Well, I don't know if you've got the minutes there, Leslie. You Mm-mm. could trump me by if you did.
No, I don't.
The discussion about that particular fact sheet, which I personally wrote and I personally presented, and the circumstances under which it were presented are different than what was imagined by the staff person that talked about it in the meeting. And I don't fault him. I mean, he was, you know, I don't know what was he doing 34 years ago. So who's to say? But in our mind, that was just that whole business was all about us coming up at the request of the city with some concepts that were different than permitted use, which was our original intent to pursue permitted use. And that was the first scenario that we came up to investigate that with the Planning Commission. It turned out that that changed three times before the City Council voted on it. And then at the 11th hour, the City Council took 25 feet off the height, in essence pushed it 25 feet into the ground. So a program, and that's all that was, that was referenced, generated by what would be, by today's standard, an antiquated computer that was basically a tool for the architect to decide how this possibly could be configured with what constraints, so that we felt comfortable and the city felt comfortable agreeing to them. That's all it was. It wasn't a specific plan that we were intending to build, per se. It wasn't a particular building. a master plan then, and even today, I think the intent is to establish basics like where is it, how much ground is it going to sit on, how high will it be, how much net density will be in it, how much parking, how much open space. Those kind of parameters, that was pretty much the format for the entirety of Deer Valley, and that's what we were talking about back then.
Planning Commission has been asking all along for more details. Do you feel like you've given them the details that they need to make a decision here?
Yes. We feel like we've greatly surpassed the amount of detail that's been requested of any similar project in Park City, and certainly the amount of detail that's reasonable to serve the purposes of a CUP application.
What about the excavation plan? Because this has changed from the original application where you intended to use conveyor belts. Now you're talking about building roads to haul up that fill.
That's another misunderstanding, Leslie. We mentioned conveyor belts as a possible way of getting the dirt up the hill in conversations at that time that were quite general. And this, when I say that time, we're talking more than 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And somehow that's the part that survived that entire conversation. Obviously, if a conveyor is installed, it doesn't have the mobility to go this way, that way, et cetera. And there's going to be distribution, compaction, a lot of earthwork associated with that. And by no means did we have the intent to say that's all we were going to do. That was one possible option. At the request of the Planning Commission, we have looked at that in greater detail. We drilled down and asked some people that have done that kind of work, not only all over the Intermountain West, but also specifically in Park City. For example, all the dirt that was moved for the Olympics over by the main base. And they said, no, you know, that won't work. And here's why. It was a pretty short conversation. First of all the material has to be processed to use a conveyor. That means you have to have some kind of crushing plant on site. We don't have the room, and then that in itself is an impact. Secondly, the maximum grade that a conveyor works at efficiently is 30%. Well, we're talking of slopes in the 40 to 50% range, so that doesn't work. We're not saying we won't use some conveyors because that might be the best way to get the dirt out of the hole to where it can be loaded onto articulating trucks. But what we think now, based on input from this company that does that, that the best way to do it is the tried and true method, the same kind of method, for example, that was used to move the dirt up at the mid-mountain area on the Park City Mountain, which happened last summer, and haul topsoil up there this summer to cover that dirt.
Yeah. I want to just get back to the details, though, because the Planning Commission, as I say, you know, they keep saying we don't have enough details to make a decision. And if that's the case, then, I mean, I think you're giving them the grounds, aren't you, to say that they don't have the details to show that a project's impact have been mitigated and then can deny it? Or is that what you're hoping for all along here, to move this along?
Well, they obviously can do whatever they do, and I'm not going to try and predict what they're going to do. I'm just saying that we feel that based on the code, based on comparables, what's happened with other similar projects, that we far exceeded the detail necessary for decision. Now, so everybody out there understands, that just starts a whole, if you get an approval that works, that starts a whole different design process. That's called the final design process. We're in what architecturally is called early schematic. And you would go to schematic, which includes mechanical and structural. And then you go through the design process, which could take to couple of years and millions of dollars. And then you spend a lot of time with the people at the building department and planning, making sure that it fits the parameters that were agreed to in the CUP process. But before to ask for all that detail in advance, to ask for final design in advance of knowing what the basic design is, it doesn't make any sense. It's not rational.
Lots of people wonder, Pat, why you and your brothers want to see a project this big on hillsides that you grew up in. I mean,
well, we think it's the right thing for the community. It brings to it no additional work on the part of the city. No new roads. Everything's built into it. Everything's off street. It supports the industry that Park City is all about, recreation, and also probably would have some permanent residents in it, but mostly it would be recreation. It's a significant infusion of cash funds and for building purposes, permits, et cetera, and then on a yearly basis, tax revenue. We think it's located within 600 feet of what was really the industrial part of Park City and close to the heart of Park City, Old Town. The property's about 1,000 feet from where we're sitting. Downtown is where you're supposed to build that stuff. And if you ask anybody that speaks green. And so we think it's a great idea. Ultimately, when it's done, it will take up less than 3% of the surface of our property. Everything else will be open space, and that includes the 7 houses that were approved in those calculations, and contiguous open space that the community can enjoy forever to ski on, walk on, hike on, bike on, and look at.
Real quick, I got a couple more questions. When you saw that voters overwhelmingly approved increasing their taxes to buy Bonanza Flat as open space, did you think to yourself they could have bought Treasure instead?
Well, sure. And that's way above our pay grade, how they spend that money. We've had conversations over the years with the city about buying the property. We've offered it to them several times that by today's standards would be 10 cents on the dollar, and they weren't interested. So we respect that. They have no obligation to buy our property. So that's where that's at.
You're in good shape, but getting older. Do you have the tenacity to see this through to the end?
Oh, yes. Both of those are true. I'm getting older, but I have the tenacity, and I am in good shape.
Okay. Hey, Pat, I need to leave it there. Thanks again for
coming
in this morning.
Thank you very much.
We've been talking with Pat Sweeney again, part of the project of Treasure Hill with MPE and Sweeney Land Co. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.